Okay. So I want to welcome everybody tonight. I want to thank Ozzie Fine and everyone else who is responsible for setting up the Shiur for tonight. And I want to thank YU Israel also for putting together the announcements, the refreshments, recording system. And I want to give a special welcome to my mother, Shetichia, who recently became a great-grandmother, a Safta Rabba, that should be a tribute to the legacy of my father, Zichrona Levracha, for whom this Yortzeit Shiur is being delivered in his memory, as it has been over the past 16 years. And it just so happens that as my mother became now a Safta Rabba, at exactly the same moment I became a Zaidi. If you can imagine such a thing. So Baruch Hashem, the bris was this past Erev Shabbos, and I was able to work things out to get on a plane on Motzei Shabbos so that I could come here straight from the airport, and hopefully I'll still be somewhat coherent. So I wanted to speak about Jews and tattoos, in part because it rhymes, but also because there's been a proliferation recently of tattoos in our community, questions regarding tattoos in recent years. It's especially true, I found, in the realm of Gerim. We know that there is an Isser in the Torah, Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Chof Ches, Veseret Lanepesh, Lo Sitnu B'Psachem, you're not allowed to imprint a tattoo on your skin. This is a prohibition in the Torah, which applies to Jews. It doesn't apply to non-Jews, as Rav Chaim Kanievsky points out, assuming, of course, that they don't have an idolatrous intent when they affix their tattoos. So there are many, many non-Jews who have tattoos. And I've discovered in recent years that a significant portion of those who have been converting to Judaism lately have tattoos. It used to be a milsa de lo shchicha, something which almost never happened. Then it became a mi'ur ha-matzoi, something you have to be bodek, you got to, you know, worry about, because it happens more than, say, 10% of the time. But it actually, at this point, has graduated to a full-fledged chazakah. That it's an actual expectation when somebody is a ger that they're going to have a tattoo. So it raises the question, do tattoos need to be removed? Let's say a Jewish person somehow follows this wild trend that has afflicted society, and they decide, oh, I know what I'm going to do today. I'm going to go out and get a tattoo. And they're not religious, so they don't know they're not allowed to. And then they become a Baal Tshuva. Do they have an obligation to remove the tattoo? Does it make a difference? Let's say that somebody's converting to Judaism. Is it better for them to remove the tattoo before, if they're going to remove it, before they convert or after they convert? Is there a chatzitza problem? If somebody has a tattoo and they want to convert to Judaism, maybe they can't go to the mikveh while the tattoo is there. Does it constitute a chatzitza? What about a Jewish person who has a tattoo and a Jewish woman needs to go to the mikveh? Does it present problems? Other shilos that I've been getting the last several years relate to what we call ipur kavua, permanent makeup. What about a woman who, for whatever reason, she has alopecia? She has some medical condition that causes her eyebrows to fall off. And it's uncomfortable to walk around without eyebrows. So you can put on some imitation eyebrows. They're not going to last. But there's a way that you can tattoo them on. And then they'll last for a long time, not forever, but they'll last for several years at least. So is that going to be a problem of tattoos if it's being done for cosmetic purposes? Let's say it's being done to cover up a blemish, such as a scar. Lo aleinu, a woman who has breast cancer and has to have parts of her female anatomy removed, and then wants to have reconstructive surgery where there are tattoo marks where she used to have the features that were removed. So is that something which would be also included in the prohibition? And finally, you have what has become a common shiloh, just women who are very busy, they're on the run. We have, Baruch Hashem, a lot of Eishes Chayil individuals who are supporting their households. Their husbands are sitting and learning in Kolel. They don't have so much time to put on makeup. So there's such a thing known as Ipur Kavua, as permanent makeup. You can put on the makeup. You can have what we call a powder brows, a powder brow tattoo, which place the place to powder the eyebrows. That's going to last for a few years at a time. That's tattooed on, and it will save the woman a tremendous amount of work and effort and toil and time to simply have permanent makeup when it comes to different areas of the face. Is that something which is included in the prohibition? So the truth is that it's a sugya that doesn't really have so many sources. There's one pasuk in the Torah. It's a sugya in Maseches Makos, Daf Chof Aleph, Amud Aleph, a very brief sugya. You have a Mishnah, you have a Gemara that talks about the contours, the parameters of a Kosev Ksoves Kaka, of somebody who imprints a tattoo. And there is a scant literature, both in the Rishonim and the Achronim, a little bit, a Ritva, Norach Lener, Achinuch, Aminchas Chinuch, a little bit here and there. And this is what led Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zechat Tzadik Livracha, to devote an entire kunteris to this particular subject that he called Pashegin HaKisav, kind of the elucidation of the issue of writing on one's skin. That's the Kisav, come from the word Kisovis Kaka. We know Pashegin HaKisav. It's an expression from Megillas Esther. You have like an edict of the king that needs to be interpreted and elucidated. He wrote in the introduction to his sefer that he felt that this was a sugya that could benefit from much elucidation, because there really is a lot of confusion and uncertainty and ignorance when it comes to these inyanim. But we just read Parshas Ekev, or Ya'ekev Tishmun. You're not supposed to trample on any mitzvos. You have to, with even those mitzvos people trample upon, if you listen to those mitzvos, you're promised a lot of schar. This is a mitzvah that unfortunately has received some trampling upon lately. So we have to, therefore, reinforce our efforts to fulfill this mitzvah and to understand the mitzvah. What are some of the questions that are subject to uncertainty with respect to the question of tattooing that will enable us to perhaps address the shilos, some of these recent questions that have arisen and continue to arise? So one question is, what is the exact nature of the tattooing process that the Torah prohibits? Seems to be two different stages to the process that the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Beis, Halacha Yud Aleph, that there is the possibility of one who etches out a writing, but doesn't quite cut into the skin. Or there's the possibility of somebody who cuts into the skin but doesn't write anything after they scratch the skin. So the prohibition of tattooing really consists of these two different elements. It's the Mishnah says, kasav lo kiakea, kiakea lo kasav. If you wrote something, you etched something on someone's skin, but you didn't scratch the skin, you didn't cut into the epidermis, because in order for the etching to have a lasting effect, it has to go beyond the upper level of the epidermis. It has to go into the dermal layer. You have a lot of poskim who talk about there are several layers above the bottom layer of the skin, which are constantly replenishing themselves. And if you write there, it's not going to be permanent. You have to get below the dermal layer into what's referred to in some of the literature as the permanent base layer, where the tattoo is going to last on a permanent level. So the question number one is, how far down does the cutting have to go? And number two, what are the elements that you need? So you need the cutting incision, puncturing of the skin. It has to go down below the epidermis. And number two, you need something which is going to have a pigment. There has to be some pigmentation. There has to be some writing and some coloring. So the Mishnah says, and the Rambam follows up with this, that if you simply wrote and you didn't have the cutting into the skin, That would not incur would not incur liability. One would not be chayev. Kasev lo roshem b'tseva, shiroshem b'tseva lo kasev b'srito. You colored in something, but you didn't cut into the skin. You're not going to be chayev. Says the Rambam, you potter achiyekto v'yekakea, unless you write and you puncture into the skin. That's what the Rambam gives you the order. Sheyisro ta b'saro. You first cut into the skin. V'yimalei makom b'srito kachol adayo. O dayo. And then you fill up the area with ink, with coloring. That is the prohibition of kesovis kaka. If you only did one and not the other, so then you're going to be putter. So there's a whole big discussion about, does the order matter? The Rambam gives the order that you scratch into the skin and then you do the writing afterwards. But if you look at the way in which it's explained by Rashi and Maseches Makos, is not really Rashi. It's called Rashi because it appears in the same place Rashi normally appears. It's actually Rashi's son-in-law, the Rivan. Rashi had passed away. So the Rivan picked up on the Perish, and he writes, Kosef Tachila Abbasaro. First you write, Ve'chakach Mekakei Abbasar. And then afterwards you scratch into the skin, B'machat or B'sakin, with a needle or with a knife. So we have already a fundamental machlokis, it seems, as to what is the order. So is the order one way or the other way? So the Bach writes in his commentary to the Torah, he says, really, the order doesn't matter. There are different ways of interpreting, with trying to go in the order that the Torah writes. So kesovis kaka. Some say that kesovis means writing, kaka means that you're drilling. And some say the kesovis really means the drilling process, and the kaka is the pigmentation process. But really, the order doesn't matter. Either way, you're going to be chayef. That's how it's generally assumed by the Bach, and by the Shach says the same thing. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky, in his Sefer Pasheg and Akasab, points out that there are a lot of Rishonim who say that, no, the order really, really does matter. So you already have one question regarding the order. Now, the way in which the modern-day tattoos are done is that you have sort of a tattoo machine. If you looked at the ad for the shear, so Rabbi Mostovsky from the CRC made a little image of a tattoo machine, in case you were wondering, you know, what in the world that was. So there are tattoo machines that drill needles into the skin with the pigmentation on it. So that might be sort of a bas achas kind of thing, that it's happening all at once. Is that automatically a problem? Is that automatically an Issur D'oraisa? So the Rav Nosson Gestetner, who's a great posek who lived very recently, he passed away a little while ago. So he says, no, for sure everyone should agree that that's going to be also on a Torah level if it's Bebas Achas. Chaim Kanievsky says he's not so sure. So we already have, you know, certain questions. And then there's a much more fundamental question, which is, well, if I need both of these steps, what if I just put something that's going to last for a while on my skin? I write a telephone number. I have a telephone number. Excuse me. I have a telephone number that I want to write on my skin in order not to forget it. It will be etched in my mind. Or I go to an amusement park and they stamp a little stamp on my skin to show that I've received, that I paid for my admission. And this way they'll let me on the rides. Or you have a little birthday party that your children go to and they come back with henna tattoos, right? Which look like tattoos, but they're not really tattoos. They don't go below the epidermis. They're going to disappear a little while later. Is that going to be a problem? So the Minchas Chinuch says, look, the Rambam says that if you wrote, but you didn't drill your putter usually means putter of aloser. It means, otherwise you could say it's mutter. It's pater, that normally means you're exempt, you don't get lashes, but it's still going to be prohibited, at least on a rabbanon, at least on a rabbinic level. So he says that he thinks that there probably would be a rabbinic prohibition if the ksav, if the writing would last forever. Even though it does not penetrate beyond your epidermis, he thinks that there would be a prohibition if it lasted forever. But fortunately, when you write down a telephone number, it's not something which is intended to last forever. It's something which, I don't know how to mute people. Okay, everybody please mute yourselves. It's something which is intended to go away after a couple of weeks or so, or even after a couple of days or a couple of hours. He said that would be heter gomer. But Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also writes that if you're writing something above your skin and you have the explicit intention that you're going to wash it off, you're going to get rid of it in short order, so then that should be completely permissible. But with all of that, there are some poskim who say that it's not necessarily the Jewish way to go and get something that even looks like a tattoo. It's one thing if you're going to write maybe in ink to not forget a telephone number on your hand, but to go and to get to something that resembles a tattoo, so maybe there's a hashkafic issue. Maybe sort of on a philosophical or ideological plane, it's something that should be avoided. But from the standpoint of Kisovis Kakov, what's prohibited when it comes to the prohibition of tattoos, so that's probably going to be okay. That's probably going to be okay. There are some poskim, like Shmuel Vosner in the Shevet Alevi, who says that he's not sure that he really understands the proof altogether. This is in Chelek Gimel Simen Kuf Yud Aleph, of saying that there's going to be even a rabbinic prohibition if there is no cutting into the skin whatsoever, even if it would last forever. He's not so convinced about that, because the proof text that is utilized by the poskim is a case which was in Gittin, that in Meseches Gittin, this is, I believe, alluded to by the Minchas Chinuch, where he talked, the case is that somebody writes a get. You know, normally you write a get on a piece of paper, but let's say that you don't have a piece of paper, but you have an eved, you have a slave who happens to be in the area. So you say, oh, I know, I'll write a get on the hand of the slave, and I'll hand the slave to the woman in question, in order to divorce her. So the Gemara comes to the conclusion that what type of writing is being done on the slave? There has to be a type of writing that can't be forged. So it has to be Kesovis Kaka. We're talking about a tattoo. And then there's a question. Tosu says, well, you know, tattoos, really strictly speaking, are forbidden. Maybe we're talking about a tattoo that is not a Torah prohibition because there's no pigmentation that's being put on it. There's no ink that's being put on it. So it sounds like, well, because of the fact that it wasn't the complete job of the tattoo, so it's only a rabbinic prohibition, but at the very least, there is a rabbinic prohibition. So Shevet Alevi says, yeah, but the case, the proof text over there regarding the get that was written on the hand of the slave, you did have a full-fledged get that was scratched into the skin of the slave. It wasn't above the surface. It says that it was scratched in. It just didn't have a pigment. It didn't have dye that was added to it. So we don't have a proof that if you only wrote above the skin, that would be problematic. There are other questions about what is the level of permanence that's needed in general. Rashi in his commentary to the Chumash, as well as the Rivan in his commentary to Maseches Makos, as well as the Sefer Achinuch, as well as the Ritva in his commentary, they all say that it has to be liolam, that a tattoo, in order to be a Torah prohibition, has to last forever. So it would seem a little bit like maybe if you have what we call the permanent, it's really semi-permanent makeup that only lasts for about 3 years, so maybe then it wouldn't run afoul, at least of the Torah prohibition, of Kesovis Kaka. So there is an Amuke Yosef that says that it's intended to be there v'nikeres sham zman gadol. In his commentary on Makos, he says that it's intended to be there for a long time, but he doesn't say forever. So it's a question, does forever mean forever, or is even a long time considered to be good enough? So this is a big, you know, question, but Rav Nosson Gestetner, in the tshuva that he wrote, where he basically prohibits this idea of semi-permanent makeup, and he says that there aren't really any good grounds to be lenient about. So he said that even if you insisted that it has to be liolam forever, we find elsewhere in Hilchos Shabbos that Rashi uses the term liolam when he's talking about certain types of knots for which one would incur Torah liability, even though at the later Meforshim, the Beis Yosef in particular, point out that the knots that were being discussed by Rashi are knots that last for a really long time, but not liolam. What's considered a really long time? A month. A month. So if a month is considered to be forever, so then 3 years is probably certainly considered to be forever. Nonetheless, the poskim do use this as a source for discussing possible leniencies. The Gemara also talks about a case, the Gemara in Makos talks about a case where somebody has a wound. They have an open wound, and they put some ashes in order to heal the wound. And those ashes, they come, these ashes are very strong, black suit ashes. It's like, you know, like carbon type, you know, a carbon type substance that you might use nowadays in order to imprint a tattoo. And they put these ashes on into the open wound, and it basically is going to create an impression that's going to last for a long time. And the Gemara says there would have been a prohibition of a tattoo if not for the fact that makasom mukhakasalav, if not for the fact that it's quite clear that it was only placed there for purposes of healing the wounds and not makasom mukhiyachalav, and not for the purpose of creating a tattoo per se. So therefore, we're going to permit it. Who cares that it was there for a different intention? So most of the posts can say that the only problem is a marisai, and it looks like a tattoo. It's not really a tattoo. Why is it not really a tattoo? You have an open wound, and you're putting into it some sort of ashes that have like a pigmentation that they're going to create this appearance that's going to remain on the skin for a long time. So some of the Rabbanim who have written on this subject say that it's because it's not going to last. It's not going to last forever, but nonetheless, it's still going to be an Issur d'Rabbanan. It's still going to be rabbinically prohibited. You could say that the reason why it's only rabbinically prohibited is because you didn't do the scratching yourself. The wound happened by itself. It was an open wound, but you didn't do the scratching. So since you didn't do the scratching, you just filled it with the ashes. So maybe that's why it's only an Issur d'Rabbanan. Others say that no, it could be that it's only an Issur d'Rabbanan. It's only a rabbinic prohibition for a different reason. That since the Gemara, the Torah says, Kisovis Kaka, you have to write for purposes of doing a tattoo. Well, let's say you're writing on Shabbos. So that requires that there be like some letters that are written. It has to be osios that are written. Or you're going to, you know, create like a nice picture at least or something like that. So there's a sefer that is quoted on the side of the Shulchan Aruch by the Piskei Tshuva. It's called the Me'il Tzedakah. The Me'il Tzedakah suggests that according to a number of authorities, this is pretty clear from the Sefer Achinuch, who says you got to be chayav even if you only wrote one letter in the tattoo. So it sounds like, well, at least you got to write one letter, that there need to be letters in the tattoos. And that's what Rabbeinu Peres, Rabbeinu Yonasan Miluneel, a number of Rishonim clearly say that in order to violate the Torah prohibition, you have to write letters in the tattoo. So therefore, it could be that the case of putting the ashes on the wound would not be a tattoo prohibition from a Torah perspective because of the fact that there are no actual letters. Well, if that's the case, though, that is another reason for potential leniency with respect to the permanent makeup, because the permanent makeup also doesn't have any letters. But the question is, but it could be that some sort of a tzura, if it has some sort of a picture, so that is still going to be a problem. So that's a question, are you creating a picture if you're just powdering an area? So you're probably not creating a picture. If you're replacing eyebrows, so maybe you are creating a picture, and you'd have to, you know, figure out whether it falls within that prohibition. Does it matter really how far down the tattoo goes? That really is a question, because the Ritva says the only requirement is that it be below the epidermis, bein or labasa, between the skin and the flesh. There's no real discussion in the Rishonim, early Achronim, about how many levels down on the flesh it needs to be. I'm not an expert at knowing how many different layers of skin there are, but it seems that if it's below the highest level of skin and it's already in what we call the dermal layer, so you already have a problem once you get to the dermal layer. Very difficult to say that this would make a difference. Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva about permanent makeup in which he suggests that maybe because of the fact that it's not scratched into the skin And we saw that the Rishonim, like Rashi, talk about scratching it into the skin. And the Mishnah talks about scratching it. So maybe if it is drilled into the skin with the needles that we have nowadays, so maybe then you wouldn't have the same culpability. But that is, he's not sure. He says that his inclination is that it probably doesn't make a difference, but he says that's also something that could potentially be taken into consideration. There is another major question about what's the nature of the tattoo that you need to have in order for it to be prohibited. There's a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanna Kamma as to whether you need to write a name, a specific name in the tattoo. The Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon says, you need to write Es Hashem. Does that mean the name of God? That's what the Gemara asks. No, not the name of God. You're supposed to, the prohibition is if you write the name of an Avodah Shem, Avodah Kochavim, the name of an idolatry. In other words, the nature of the prohibition of tattoos, as the Rambam writes, is that the non-Jews, the idolaters, used to demonstrate their allegiance and commitment and loyalty to their idols by carving out the name of the idols into their skin. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, you need to do that in order for it to be a prohibition. However, the ensuing discussion in the Gemara that talks about there being some type of a prohibition if you're just putting ashes in the area, that would seem to indicate that it doesn't have to be the name of an idolatry. So most of the Mefarshim, including the Ritva, say that from the conclusion of the Gemara, it's clear that we don't hold like Rabbi Shimon, we'd hold like the Chachamim. That seems to be the ruling of the Rambam, seems to be the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, that any kind of image would be a problem. However, there is a possibility that even though if you don't need to write the name of an idolatry in order to violate the Torah prohibition, according to Moshitos, there it seems that the Rif and the Rosh were of the opinion that you would be that we do hold like Rabbi Shimon, and you would have to write the name of an idolatry in order to incur the prohibition. Nonetheless, even if we hold like the opinion of the Chachamim, there's a Tosefta that talks about how, technically speaking, it would be okay if you had a slave and you wanted to indicate that the slave should not run away. So then it would be Haroshe Mal Abdo Shelo Yivrach, that you make a tattoo, you engrave a tattoo in your slave so he won't run away. Putter, so then you're exempt from liability. Now again, it doesn't say mutter. It says you're exempt from liability. At least I know that I would not have a Torah prohibition. Why wouldn't I have a Torah prohibition in that case? So some of the Mefarshim explain, such as the Aruch Lener, that it has to be L'shem Avodah Zarah, that this is the reason why the Rambam gives you the reason for the prohibition. Normally the Rambam doesn't give you reasons unless it's in the Mora Nevuchim, his work on philosophy, but in the Mishnah Torah he's just codifying halakos, he gives you halakos. Here the Rambam gives you the reason for the prohibition, meaning that it's only going to be a Torah violation, according to this understanding, if it is for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, for the purpose of idolatry. So therefore, if you're doing a tattoo on your slave in order to demonstrate your slave shouldn't run away, or you're making a tattoo into a wound for purposes of just healing the wound, so then that's not going to be a prohibition, at least on a Torah level. A variation of this answer is given by the commentary, the Get Pashut, who says that the reason why, for example, you can have a get, which is written on the hand of a slave, like the Gemara in Gittin says, and there's a question, if the witnesses sign the get, shouldn't that make them puzzle because they're signing with a tattoo? So they're violating a tattoo, so then they're invalid witnesses, so how can the get be kosher? So that's a question that the Beis Shmuel asks. And the Get Pashut says, no, that you need the kavana that you really want a tattoo. Here, what the people want is that they just want to write a get. But they're not. It's not that they care about doing a tattoo. So you could say the same thing, maybe with a permanent makeup. You just care about having the makeup that's going to be there. You're not doing it for the purpose of a tattoo. So maybe that would be a reason for leniency as well. We have to, maybe in order to figure out what would be, let's say, rabbinically prohibited according to these considerations, and what should be 100% permissible. So there's one question that all of the rabbinic writers who have written articles on this subject and so forth, that they all ask the same question. They say, why is it that when it comes to engraving some sort of a tattoo on your slave, so there we say putter, so you're exempt from liability. But the Ramah writes in the Shulchan Aruch that it's still a chatzkila aser, it's still prohibited, it's at least a rabbinic prohibition. But when it comes to the placing of the ashes on the wound, even though it's going to leave an impression for a long time, we say makasa mochiach alof, that the wound is indicative of the fact that it is not only being done for the ashes indicate, and the wound indicate that it's only being done for purposes of healing a wound, and therefore it's 100% permissible. Why in the case of the slave, even though it's just being done so the slave won't escape, people will see he's branded, so to speak, is it still a rabbinic prohibition at least? And in the case of the ashes, it's 100% permissible. So one answer that's given is that if you look at ashes on a wound, so it's 100% clear that this is clearly only for a wound, as opposed to that if you have a tattoo on a slave, so it's not going to be immediately obvious that it's only there so that the slave doesn't run away. Maybe it's just there so that you wanted a pretty tattoo on your slave. And we're talking about a slave that is already partially Jewish, who already had a circumcision and went to the mikvah, so that's why there would be a prohibition with the slave in the first place. In which case, you have to say, well, you need to be able to look. That might be you need to be able to tell just by looking at the tattoo that it's not being done, let's say, for idolatrous purposes. Well, if that's the case, well, clearly, if I look at a woman's makeup, I know that it's not being done for idolatrous purposes. Secondly, it could be that with respect to the Afer Makle, with respect to the ashes, maybe there was no, as we said before, you didn't do any scratching. So therefore, the person only filled in the ink, but he didn't do the actual scratching, the actual cutting. So then you wouldn't have that, as opposed to the tattoo of the slave, then you wouldn't have that heter with respect to a woman's permanent makeup, because there, the whole thing is being done by the woman or at the woman's instruction, both the cutting and the pigmentation into the skin. Rav Chaim Pelagi, who is quoted by Rav Ezra Batsri, who wrote an article, a lenient article, at least in certain cases, on this subject. So he wrote a commentary to the Shulchan Aruch called the Ruach Chaim, and he says, I'll tell you the difference. With the slave, you want your slave not to run away. There are other ways of preventing your slave from running away. However, when it comes to the curing of the wound, the only way you can cure it is by putting in these ashes. So therefore, since there's no other choice, that's the reason why you could be lenient. So then you have to look at the case with the woman's makeup. If the woman just wants to have the convenience of having the makeup tattooed on, this what we call powder brush or whatever, tattooed on for so that she'll save herself the inconvenience of doing it like every week or every month herself, so then she does have another option. But if it's a woman who has alopecia and her hair is simply falling out, and she's not going to be able to fix it unless she actually affixes, eyebrows, the fake eyebrows through a tattoo. So it could be she doesn't have another option, and then there'd be more room to be makel. Along similar lines, Rav Asher Weiss writes that the distinction between the cases is that we're more makel, again, assuming that we're only dealing with a rabbinic prohibition to begin with, either because the intention is not idolatrous, or because there hasn't been a permanent tattoo, or because there hasn't been a permanent playing out of the process of the scratching and the writing, or because you need osios, you need letters, or you need, a specific yatsura, you need some sort of a clear picture as opposed to simply an imprint. Whatever reason, you have to get it down to a rabbinic level to begin with, but in order to make it permissible, so he says the difference between the cases is because when you have the wound, you're in pain. You're in pain. You need the afer. You need the ashes to like help cure the wound. That was the medicine at the time. You need the ashes to help cure the wound. So if it's a question of alleviating pain, so then we're going to be more makel as opposed to the case of the slave. It's just a monetary convenience. I want to protect my possessions when people own slaves. So that is not to alleviate tsar. It's not to alleviate the pain. So then there's no reason to be mekel. So here too, we could distinguish between a woman who has the pain of suffering from some medical condition. She had, you know, a part of her anatomy which needed to be taken off. So therefore, there's more room. But Rav Yosher rules in that case that you can rely upon the opinion of the Me'il Tzedaka, who says that it's only a rabbinic prohibition in the first place, because you don't have actual osios, you don't have actual letters that are carved out in the woman's area of her anatomy where she had surgery for breast cancer. So therefore, you're going to replace that part of her anatomy. There's more room to be mekel to say because of a covet abrius, because of makom tsar, we can be mekel similar to the case of the aper makle. And this sort of plays out in terms of how the poskim address this particular issue. You really have three different approaches amongst the poskim. The first approach is that which you find by in Rav Nosson Gishtetner, the Tshuvos Lahoros Nosson, which is located in Chelek Yud Simen Samech Dalid, and Mabarak Shraga, an article that he wrote in Tuchumen. Mabarak Shraga is a dayan here in Eretz Yisrael. And they basically say that there is no good leniency to rely upon. If it's going to be there, the permanent makeup is going to be there for 3 years. So that counts as probably as liolam. That's long enough for there to be a full-fledged prohibition. Any kind of roshem whatsoever, any kind of mark at all, there's one reading of the Rambam like this, would create a problem. And they say that there's no real good proof that you only are liable if you're doing it for idolatrous purposes. That's not really a very strong argument. And therefore, they argue that it's always going to be a potential problem of a Torah prohibition. So even for medical purposes, they're not inclined to be lenient. I'd say the most prevalent shita is that which I quoted even from Rav Yosher, that if it's a medical situation, there's room to be lenient. But if it is not a medical situation, so then you have to be machmir not to allow the permanent makeup, because the main basis of a leniency would be covered abrios, that we suspend rabbinic prohibitions out of compassion for people who are otherwise in tremendous tsar. Satosus and Shabbos Daf Nun Amud Beis, who says that the worst type of tsar is being uncomfortable walking out amongst people because you just don't look normal like the rest of the people. So therefore, that would be a reason to be lenient. And others say, Rabbi Bleich has an article in which he quotes the Leiv Aryeh, Rabbi Aryeh Grossness, if a person was sick, so the Cholesh Ein Bo Sakana, you could be lenient to relax certain rabbinic prohibitions. The difference between whether I apply the approach of Kavod Abrios or Cholesh, so let's say the woman wasn't sick. She just has a bad habit that she plucks out the hair from her eyebrows, and now she wants to be able to replace the eyebrow hair by putting in a tattoo. Well, there is a Kavod Abrios, but there isn't necessarily a choli. There isn't necessarily an illness. So then it might be more difficult. Some poskim are less inclined to be makel in that case. So this distinction between the cases where a woman has really, you know, suffered from some sort of a condition where you could be more makel to allow putting on fake eyebrows, for example, but in terms of permanent makeup, you don't find the same materim. So that distinction you find in Rav Ezra Batzri, you find that also in Rav Shraga Schneebalg. Rav Shraga Schneebalg was a dayan in London. He wrote a sefer of Shilos Tshuvos called Shraga HaMeir. In Shraga HaMeir, Simon Mem Gimel to Mem Dalet, he talks about these issues. And he says a very creative argument as to why, if you're just replacing, for example, or you're just like covering up a scar, he says why it would be you can have more leniency. He says that the whole argument or the whole the prohibition of, you know, why it is that you're not supposed to tattoo is that whether it's showing allegiance to idolatry or I'm writing something in order to follow the ways of the Gentiles who, you know, implant tattoos, markings on their skin, So that's if I'm going to actually have something that stands out as a mark. But if what I'm putting is to obscure some sort of a mark, like there's a scar that I'm covering up. So he says, so that's like a reverse tattoo. So a reverse, like it's a tattoo, we don't necessarily find is going to be prohibited. It's a very creative argument. It does rely a little bit on this svara, on this rationale, that the intention is a very, very, you know, important, that you want to create, that you need to have an intention of creating a ksiba, some sort of a writing, but that is what's written pretty explicitly by the Sefer Get Pashut, so he does have what to rely upon. Then there's a third approach, which is the approach of Avigdor Nevinson, Shlita, and also was developed over time by Rav Avadya Yosef Zatzal in the third volume of his book, Atara Sabayas, which is, it could be that it's all mutter. It could be that it's all mutter because I have sort of a combination of lenient considerations that I have, for example, the consideration that with respect to permanent makeup, it's not the very lowest level. It's only one layer below the epidermis. Although, as we saw, we don't really have such a basis in the classical sources to be makel on that basis. But then there are three other considerations. One, that it's not permanent. Second, that it doesn't have tsuris osios. It's not written like letters. It's just mimicking, you know, part of the body. Or in certain cases, it's helping to provide like a type of makeup which doesn't have a picture altogether. And maybe if you want to throw in like a third consideration, maybe we hold this opinion of the Aruch Lenair and others, that it has to be for the intention of Avodah Zorah, that it has to be for the intention for idolatrous purposes. So if you know it's for a different purpose, so you could be Mako. So Rav Nevinson thought that because of the fact that there was no Kavanah for Osios, for writing letters, and there's no specific picture that you're drawing with permanent makeup, I don't know if the same answer applies to the fake eyebrow case, but in the most of the permanent makeup type of situations, like the powdered eyebrows, so you're not, you know, drawing a particular image. So he says it's not ksiva like. For Hilchos Shabbos purposes, we wouldn't call it ksiva. And what's the prohibition? Kesovis kaka. This isn't ksiva, it's tsoveya. And there's no, it doesn't say in the Torah you can't do tsoveya's kaka. So it's a very, it's certainly a creative argument. Rav Avadya Yosef initially had agreed together with Rav El Yashiv and the others not to allow permanent makeup. Rav Chaim Kanievsky was also opposed, and he signed on to Rav Baruch Shraga's article in Shuva, in which he ruled that way originally. And then Rav Avadya Yosef writes in his third volume of Tara Sabayas that he had a change of heart over time, and he thought that there was really a good reason to be makel, since it didn't have letters, and it's not permanent, and it's not l'shem avodah zarah. But he said that he wasn't going to be makel l'chatchila. He wouldn't be lenient. And I've gotten this question. So even the most lenient shitas are not comfortable being lenient l'chatchila. Rav Asher Weiss also, writes like this. Therefore he says that he would just say, ein maznichen osa. If a woman decided to do that, so he would not hold her in contempt. He wouldn't like throw her out of the community or anything like that. He wouldn't hold her in contempt, but he wouldn't endorse this l'chatchila. But he said in a situation to cover up a scar, where it's covered up real, so then he said 100% l'chatchila, I would agree with that 100%. And basically, Rav Asher Weiss said the same thing. A woman had a large scar on her face, and he felt that it would be a shalom bias issue if she wouldn't be able to cover it up with permanent makeup. So kadesh lo tiskan el baila, so she should look nice for her husband. So he said that he certainly felt that the various considerations would be good enough to marshal a heter, a leniency in that case. Just to move along, because we only have another 15 minutes. So I wanted to talk about, is there an obligation to remove tattoos if a person has a tattoo? So it's an interesting minchas chinuch. This is in Mitzvah Reish Nun Gimel. The discussion about tattoos is in Mitzvah Reish Nun Gimel. The Minchas Chinuch is actually in Hilchos Shabbos. The Minchas Chinuch is in, hold on. Mitzvah Lamed Beis. So Mitzvah Lamed Beis, Os Lamed Hey. The Minchas Chinuch says that if a person erases a tattoo on Shabbos, so then according to the Rambam, who says that even if you erase, not for the purpose of writing, but just for some constructive purpose, that's a malacha mokek on Shabbos, you'll be chayiv. Why are you chayiv erasing a tattoo? You're not obligated to erase a tattoo. Rav Chaim Kanievsky in his Pasheg and Akasab brings all kinds of proofs. He says the fact that there's such an argument, do you do the writing first, or the scratching first, or the writing first? He said, if the prohibition was having that tattoo, we wouldn't care about the order. Shows the prohibition is the making of that tattoo. Once you have it, you're not obligated to remove it. The Rav Yashiv says the same thing. But he says it's a nachon. It's a proper thing. He says that I'll call upon him, Leos Kena Abisaro Eno Nachon Yisrael. It's not a nachon. It's not a Jewish thing to do, to walk around with tattoos. So therefore, it's still considered to be a tikkun. It's fixing it when you're erasing it on Shabbos. And Rabbi Yashiv also says it's a davar yashav l'may tifla. It's considered to be an upright thing if you can get rid of the tattoo. But says Rabbi Yashiv, that doesn't mean that you can compound the problem by getting rid of your tattoo by tattooing over it. It says if you're going to tattoo over it, so then you're going to just compound the prohibition. That's the only way you get rid of it. So you're not allowed to get rid of it. What about having surgery to get rid of it? Not tattooing, but you have surgery. So you're going to cut into it just to get rid of it, not to like write over it. So that he says, would that be a prohibition of Kabbalah? You're not allowed to wound yourself for no good reason. There's no obligation to get rid of that tattoo. So some poskim say you really shouldn't do that. You really should not do a full-fledged surgery because it doesn't warrant Kabbalah. But Rav Yashiv felt, no, this is Kabbalah. Wounding yourself is only prohibited if there isn't like a positive purpose to it. There has to be derech nisayon, derech bizayon. But if it has a positive purpose, then it would be permissible. So he allows that. But everybody says that the best way to remove a tattoo where you don't run into any of these problems is by laser surgery. The laser surgery is not invasive. There's no wounding involved with respect to the body. So therefore, that's considered to be the best thing. If a person could only really get rid of the tattoo by tattooing over it, and you're dealing with a conversion candidate, so then really the best time to do that would be prior to conversion, and when they have no prohibition of making a tattoo into their skin. And similarly, according to those poskim, that you should avoid Kabbalah, so there's no pashtus is that for a non-Jew that's okay also. And therefore, that would also be a reason to take care of the tattoo before converting. But if the tattoo is only going to be removed through laser surgery, so that's something that could presumably be done post-conversion. It's not an impediment to its converting in the first place, in the sense that it's not a continuing violation. There's no prohibition that the person is violating by virtue of having a tattoo on their skin. I remember I once met a conversion candidate. He'd been a soldier in the United States Army. He had this giant tattoo that was like visible for everybody to see, even when he was wearing clothing. And he was telling everybody, I'm going to get a tattoo before I convert. You know, I'm going to get the tattoo removed before I convert. Because he just assumed that he needed to remove the tattoo before he converted. But that's a misimpression. The conversion would be allowed to take place even while he still had the tattoo. But sometimes we see tattoos that are, kind of a little bit troubling. There are all kinds of interesting shuvos about different types of tattoos. Perhaps the most famous is Rabbi Ephraim Ashri, the famous posek, from the camps in the Holocaust. So he was asked by a woman, this was a number of years afterwards, like maybe 20 years after liberation, 1965 or so. So they were giving out money that was coming from the Germans for reparations for anybody who had the numbers that were etched by the Nazis, that were tattooed by the Nazis on their skin. They were giving out $1,000 for everybody to have the surgery to remove the numbers if they wanted to remove them. So she asked Rabbi Ashri, well, should I take the money in order to remove the numbers? And Rabbi Ashri said, absolutely not. That it's very important for you to keep this as a sign of what the Nazis did, so that this is a way that of remembering Amalek. That the Germans, the Nazis, are the modern-day Amalek. This is the way that we're going to remember what they did, and that they'll be held accountable when all of these people are walking around with these tattoos. It's like a Kiddush Hashem for you to be walking around with the tattoos. It wasn't only Rav Ashri who said that. Also, Rav Eliezer Silver, famous posek from Cincinnati, said exactly the same thing, that this would be Ma'orer Es Hadin, that this is something which would cause the judgment to be stirred up against the Nazis, when people would see the numbers, what they had done to these poor people, whom they had stamped numbers on their skin, so they felt that it was proper to leave it on the skin. There was a contrary opinion that was expressed by the editor of the journal Hamaor, the Meir Amzel, who said, "What are you talking about? It's a chor. Machotim cheh. You know, this is what they did to us." He said, "If you want to, you know, get to have proper judgment executed against the Nazis, line up all of the surviving Nazis and tattoo on their foreheads." But there's no reason why this woman should have to suffer. If their tattoo is causing her distress, let her take the money. I think that my impression is that most of the Jews who did have the numbers kept the numbers on their skin. Out of Yom HaZeh, we know Holocaust survivors, they show the numbers, and it does, you know, stir up a certain amount of emotion and also a tremendous amount of respect, you know, for what those individuals went through. But there are certain tattoos that are just objectively problematic. Rav Ashri also wrote a tshuva about somebody who was in the ghetto or putting on tefillin, and the Nazis caught him, and they engraved, they tattooed a cross, a shesi v'ariv, in his makom tefillin. So he wanted to know, am I allowed to put tefillin on that particular location? There's a cross there. He didn't talk about taking off the tattoo. It wasn't such a science necessarily in those days. But he says, well, there are shitos about that maybe it's not considered to be chatzitza, and so therefore he would suggest that in order that people not see the cross, he put on the tefillin when he's at home, then walk to shul with the tefillin already on, and then he walk home with the tefillin on and take them off at home so people wouldn't have to see the cross. But it was very, very poignant type of a shaila that that he was dealing with. There are cases that are discussed by both of Usher Weiss and Rabakshi Doron regarding a person who had the Shem Hashem that was engraved on them. In the case of Rabakshi Doron, it was in the, I think it was in the shoulder. And in the case of Usher Weiss, it was engraved in the person's ankle, that they had engraved Shin Dal Yud, Shakai, on their ankle when they weren't religious. And now the woman, I think it was a woman, became a Bala Shuva. And the question is, are you allowed to erase the name of a Kodesh Baruch Hu? So he brings a Rambam who says that if the name was not written with the Kavana, with the intention of sanctifying it, he said this was some non-Jew in Brazil. What kind of intention would they have had of sanctifying the name? So then you are allowed to take it off. And also he quotes from a Chassam Sofer, who says that if it's causing a bizayon, it's causing an embarrassment to the name of God, so you're also allowed to take it off. That was the case where a sofer had written the name of God in a very appropriate setting, and then some non-Jewish hooligan took the name that was engraved somewhere and affixed it to the side of a bathroom. And the Chassam Sofer ruled that in this case, it's appropriate to actually erase it, because otherwise you're causing a greater desecration to God's name. And here it's on the woman's ankle, and she's going to be like walking around. There's going to be dirt that gets on her ankle and so forth. So he said that it would be more of a desecration. And also he said that if you have the process of the laser surgery, which is, I think, called phagocytosis, so that type of surgery just kind of like breaks up the particles from each other and causes it to get absorbed into the skin. So it's a gradual erasure. So it's a gram mechika of God's name with Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, seems to indicate would be okay. So based on that confluence of considerations, he was Mako as well. But Bakshi Daron's case was unbelievable. What was engraved in this woman's shoulder when she was like young and she was trying to find spiritualism, so she found some fake Kabbalah, some fake Mekubal, and the Mekubal said, oh, you know what you should engrave on your shoulder? The following pasuk. Uchsovis ka'aka lo sitnu v'chem ani Hashem. The pasuk of, you're not allowed to have a tattoo, I am God, with the name of God, that's what you should put on the skin. That's what she had on the skin, and he came to a similar conclusion that it would be appropriate to remove. So one of the big questions is this question of, is there the intention to endow sanctity? One, when I was first discovering that our conversion candidates had tattoos up to the gazoo, so one of the first times was a person like took off their clothing, they're ready to go into the mikvah, and suddenly I see, you know, there's a tattoo on the shoulder that says, neither gods, no, it's in Latin. I said, what is that? I mean, I know a little bit of Latin, but I said, what does that mean? And they said, oh, it means neither gods nor men. So what?
You know, what do you mean? Well, it's guards in the plural, so it wasn't intended to like be a reference to God. Well, yeah, but then it's still a reference to potential idolatry. But at least it wasn't, you know, Hashem, Hashem. If it's idolatry, if that's the God that's intended, so then you don't have the same problem of like standing naked in the presence of God's name. So you don't have those issues of defiling God's name. But this person also had a tattoo that said Shalom. The tattoo said Shalom. Now we know Shalom, at least the Chumrah, there's a Ramah in Yoredeah, Simon Reish Ayin Vav, says you should be careful about writing the name Shalom. You should write Shishin Lamed Vav Chupchik. You know that it's a Gemara that talks about not calling somebody Shalom in a bathhouse, because that also is considered to be a Shem Hashem. But there's a Piskei Tshuva who quotes a Radbaz who says this was only when the name Shalom is intended as a greeting, because when you greet, you intend to invoke God's name. Like Boaz said to his workers, you know, Yivarechecha Hashem. But if it's but if it's just intended to mean, oh, there should be peace between men, there should be peace between the Charedim and the Chilonim, if that's the intention of what what the word Shalom means or was intended for, so then it doesn't have the connotation of Shem Hashem. So I asked the person, what did you mean by Shalom? He said, I meant peace, there should be peace in the world. I said, oh, fine, we'll let it stand. But I discovered that this is becoming so prevalent that some of these tattoos, if they're not able to take them off before they convert, we don't require them to take them off, but if they do have avodah zarah connotations, or they have God's name, and I'll give you one other example, and then we tell them you really have to remove it because it's just not appropriate to have this type of tattoo. So that's part of the Kabbalah so mitzvah. So I've had converts in the mikvah, which I've said that part of the Kabbalah so mitzvah, you agree you're going to keep Shabbos, you're going to keep Kashrus, you're going to remove those tattoos that we spoke about, that's, you know, part of what they have to accept upon themselves if the tattoos are very problematic. But as Rav Yosher says, even if it's an Avodah Zarah tattoo, if the only way to remove it is by kind of tattooing over it, so then it's better to leave it under those circumstances. But thank God, now you can get rid of it through laser surgery. So the last case is the case of the scantily clad woman embedded in, let's say, a person's arm. So the Minchas Yitzchak had such a case. A scantily clad woman, a picture of such a woman embedded upon his, exactly where he put on his tefillin. And then the question was, is he allowed to put on his tefillin? So the Minchas Yitzchak said, well, maybe, you know, the tefillin really shouldn't go on any kind of a substance, but according to some poskim, if you have a thin layer of leather, which is the same substance as the tefillin itself, min b'mino ein chotzeitz, it won't be a real chatzitza. So therefore, put the tefillin on. Make sure you have a small a pair of tefillin, but you'll be able to mostly fit it, you know, on an area which is completely just clear, completely bare, without any kind of a covering. And then the part that's not covered will just be like a small amount of the image that won't look so problematic. When you make the bracha, you'll cover that area as well. You'll cover the entire area when you make the bracha. And then afterwards, you'll take off the part that the tefillin is going to go directly on. And the other part should remain covered just in case the tefillin should, you know, slide off. And that it's going to, you'll have, you know, more of a picture of the improperly clad woman or scantily clad woman. And therefore, he kind of, you know, had that solution. But then he said that I hear that it is possible to remove these tattoos altogether, and therefore that's what I would highly recommend. Rav Bezalel Stern, who was a posek in Australia, also dealt with a similar case, told the person they can't put the tefillin on that area altogether, because just like you can't, you know, stand in a, you're not allowed to have a mezuzah in an area where you have God's name, so you're not supposed to have any kind of writing if your mezuzah with God's name in a bedroom where a man and woman are going to be together, unless the mezuzah is covered up. So too, you shouldn't have any kind of an erva, any kind of promiscuity in the area where you're going to have tefillin. And also, he said it could lead to hirhurim, it could lead to improper thoughts. So he said the only solution is to get rid of the tattoo. Then he had a very elaborate tshuva that we don't have time to discuss, in which he said that maybe tattooing on top of a tattoo, if it's for the purpose of erasure and not for the purpose of writing, just like in Hilchos Shabbos, if you're not fixing anything, you're only getting rid of something, maybe it's not ksiva, so maybe it wouldn't be a problem of tattooing either. Again, Rebbe Yoshe didn't seem to buy into that argument, and at the end of the day, we have the possibility of laser surgery, so you don't have to rely upon that kula. But what about the idea of chatzitza altogether? How do you go to the mikveh with a tattoo? So here, Avaya Yosef says, no problem, because he was talking about permanent makeup. For permanent makeup, it's not a problem because it's linoi. It's for purposes of beautifying a woman's appearance. We're not talking about that. What if it's not linoi? It's just to the annoy. It's an annoying tattoo that a person has on their skin. So is this something which would be a chatzitza? So a Pinchas Zvichi, in the Shailos Tshuvas Ateres of Paz, Yoredei Chelik Beis Simen Ches, has a fascinating tshuva about this, not in the context of conversion, just a woman who had a tattoo in her earlier life, and now she wants to get married, and she doesn't know, can I go to the mikveh at all with the tattoo? And he says that we have a principle, he quotes from various Mishnayos, that talk about how if you have a chetz, an arrow, which is embedded in the person's body, it's going to be a chatzitza, because it's I can't even imagine the case. But, you know, it's like, I don't know, think of like a whale with a harpoon in it. I don't know. It's like a person has an arrow inside of their body. So it's going to be a chatzitza because it's impossible that you wouldn't have a little bit sticking out on the skin. But he says that if it's completely embedded, we see that's going to be okay because that's considered to be balua. Anything which is completely embedded inside, and here it's below, you know, the upper layer of the skin. So he says, and here it's a real tattoo. It's going to be very far down in the skin. So he says that's going to be okay, and it's not going to constitute a chatzitza. And even though the Tshuva Me'ava, who is the chief rabbi of Prague after Noda B'Yuda, he said that if it's going to eventually come off, even though it's balua, so then it is going to be a chatzitza. He says that's only if it comes off, you know, by itself. But not if it's going to, you need like a whole surgery, you know, a whole operation to get it off. So then it's still going to not be a problem. And he says, even if the woman is makpid, she doesn't want the tattoo. You could say if she doesn't care, so maybe that's another reason it wouldn't be a chatzitza. But here, she wants it off. And she even has an appointment with the surgeon to get it removed by laser surgery. The appointment's going to be next week. And now she wants to go to the mikveh right now. He says you could still be makel, that it's considered to be balu, it's considered to be absorbed in the skin, and therefore it doesn't create a chatzitza issue for purposes of going to the mikvah. So these are some of the really interesting and kind of peculiar, you know, types of shilos that have arisen in the last number of years regarding tattoo removal, regarding tattoo implantation, regarding permanent makeup, regarding tattoos for people who have alopecia and other types of medical conditions. And it's important to understand the sugya, to understand all of the parameters. But one thing that we see from all of this is the importance of not having this attitude or ideology or way of looking at the world that we feel we need to show our allegiance to something else other than God. If you look at the pasuk, Rabbi Jachter very beautifully has this in his article on tattoos. The very end of the pasuk is Uksovis Kaka Losit Numbachem Ani Hashem. What's the message about not tattooing? That we have only one allegiance in this world, in terms of whom we dedicate our body and soul to, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is, I think, a reminder to us that really should be the only mark. We just, you know, celebrated, as I mentioned, Baruch Hashem, the Bris Milah of Enenikol, you know, a couple of days ago. And this is really, you know, so appropriate in terms of honoring my father's legacy that we honor tonight. That this is the real mark that we believe in. That's the only mark. It's the Os Bris Kodesh. The Os Bris Kodesh is showing our allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So may we always be careful to use our bodies properly, only to show allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to keep mitzvos and to be zocheh, to celebrate Simchas always in our families. Okay, thank you.